Good evening and welcome to the forum. On tonight's program, we bring you part two of the Green Party's candidate forum, recorded back in July at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, as part of the Green Party's annual national meeting. Hopefully you had a chance to hear part one of the forum last week, either live as we broadcast it, or online at kkfi.org. If not, you will have plenty of time to catch up later by going to that podcast. This candidate forum will conclude 20-odd minutes into the program, and for the remainder of tonight's show, we'll bring you the speech by keynote speaker James Lane. So, we'll pick up where we left off last week, and the very first voice you will hear will be that of George Martin, one of the facilitators of the candidate forum. George is a founding member of the Green Party's Black Caucus. Now here's George.
We have a three-minute wrap-up by each of our candidates, which would take us well past our time. And this is such good information that's what's happening here. So we'd like to buy a little time and go into the social hour and entertain one more important question. Is that okay with everybody?
Yes.
Thank you. And then the wrap-up. So the question is...
Excuse me. I thought the audience was going to be able to ask questions.
So the last audience question is, can we create a peaceful, just, democratic, and sustainable world within a capitalist economic system?
The answer is no, but the answer has to be, have an asterisk. I haven't used the word socialism and capitalism except in a historical sense for well over 10 years. There's an entirely new paradigm that I believe to be infinitely more robust. Thank you.
I say yes. The reason is, black folk have always had a second economy. We do a lot of bartering. I believe if people do cooperative living, we can defunct the war economy and the corporate understanding. There's so many people. Where's Sanda? Look at Sanda's situation that she has set up. There, we can do it. And it's just relying on each other so that we don't buy into the corporate understanding. Yes, we can do it.
To have a future at all, we cannot go forward under this predatory, corporatist, capitalist economy. Any kind of future. Now, that said, I think it's not so useful to get into terminology debates, and I think we can use terms like cooperative economies, and terms like localized, green, democratized economies, where the people who are the participants in our places of work and the participants in the economy are the ones who are running it, where our lives are not being run by a tiny group of powerful investors who live far away in their castles and who make the decisions about what our lives are going to be like. We need to be making those decisions. And there are many ways for us to get there, but we do have to break the power of the oligarchy, we have to break the power of the banks, we have to break the power of the Democratic and Republican parties who represent those interests. That is what we are doing as Greens, and the time has never been more powerful for us to do that.
Can we create a peaceful, just, democratic world within our current capitalistic system? You're going to love this answer. Yes and no. How's that for a political answer? We can't within our system exactly as it is. No, our system has to change. But the powers that be are so entrenched, so difficult to remove, that we have to talk about transformation. We have to talk about perhaps a tiered system of barter, wherein we basically allow our current economic system, which is basically a system based on fantasy with horrific effects, the boom and bust part, but it also has a good side in that the entrepreneurial spirit can be rewarded. That will stay just because it's so entrenched. But beneath this, we need to have a higher basic standard of living, a greater baseline that recognizes sustainability. In other words, the basics that you need on hand, water, food, energy, shelter, need to be readily available outside of our current economic system, which gains such things to the extent that there really is no social safety net. So we basically do need these dual economies, one in which we engage more in trade and barter and local script, one in which we grow more of our own food. If you have furlough time, you ought to be spending it in the garden, and to get away from the bankers and the centralized system. And so, yes, we do need to affect change, but I'm an advocate for transformation, and that's what we need, rapid transformation. Thank you.
The very nature of capitalism goes against the laws of nature, and I said the laws of nature. Nature is give and take. Capitalism is take and take. And that cannot be sustained because you can't keep taking more than you're giving. So we need to live cooperatively. We need to live communally. I had a student, I do have a degree to teach English, secondary, and I had a kid in one of my classes, and I was actually doing a more of a broad sweeping curriculum, and we were doing a little bit of history, and it was a multiple choice, and it was capitalism is A, B, C, or D, and he got to what was supposed to be the right answer. Capitalism is a system that fosters competition between businesses, and the kid looks up at me, 17 years old, and he says, no, capitalism is where you destroy the competition. No, that's right. Capitalism is about us destroying each other, and therefore capitalism is a corrupt, dirty system. Now, doesn't mean we can't be a little diverse in our economies. I personally, you know, I'm kind of a tribal guy, and I'm a bioregional person. I think we should be making as much of our own goods in our communities as is possible and trading with other communities. That is going to take a whole overhaul of everything. And if we have to stick with money, and money, as the Bible tells you, love of money, Bible tells you, love of money is the root of all evil. But if we're going to have money, then just change the name of the dollar to the hour so that everybody's time is equal. Thank you very much.
Okay. We're now going to have a 3-minute conclusion remarks, starting with candidate 2.
Thank you for allowing us to speak with you and hear you. I was concerned. I was concerned that we didn't get audience questions, so I really appreciate all the questions that were submitted. I also like to thank our candidates. We are all capable of leading this party. I'm impressed with my brothers and sister here on stage. My focus, again, is the messenger and the message. We need a strategy, and that's refocusing our energy as Greens to driving operationally what we do, restoring green understanding to every one of our fellow citizens. The fourth one is to simplify. Our party is even too complicated. The CC, the EG, the BP, the WeWe is way too much. And then deliver a candidate with a message that can get us in the White House. My last minute is a song. I made it up in 08. Paint the White House green, won't you help me to paint the White House green? Thank you. Curry, 2016.
I just want to stress that we do have the power. There are 40 million millennials who are in debt, with college debt, with no real chance to pay it back because the jobs that are being created, 75%, in fact, of all jobs that have been created in this so-called recovery, which is actually an emergency, it's not a recovery, 75% of those jobs are low-wage, temporary, and part-time work. So you see the unemployment numbers going down, but they're not going down to anything that keeps people out of poverty or creates a sustainable way of life. We are in a prolonged emergency, and if you, according to the Census Bureau, one out of every two American families is now in poverty or low income, heading for poverty. Add to that 40 million young people who are in debt without a real opportunity to get out of it. Add to that one out of every three African Americans held hostage by the prison state. We got a majority here. We got a solid majority that's being represented by the vision of the Green Party. If no one else but millennials came out to strike debt by checking the green box in the 2016 election, because we are the only party, we are the only campaign that calls for the abolition of student debt, not just free public higher education, but end the debt. We did it for the bankers who caused the crisis. Let's do it for the students who are the victims of it. If that word alone gets out and brings out millennials to end their own debt by voting green in 2016, 40 million voters is enough to win a three-way race. So don't let anybody say that we don't have the power. We do have the power. In the words of Alice Walker, the biggest way people give up power is by not knowing we have it to start with. We do have it. It's time to use it. There are very exciting things in store. We have a case filed already, a legal case, along with the Green Party, to open up the debates and force them open. Because when Greens are in debates, we win the debates. We have a volunteer organizing meeting tomorrow night at 6:15. There are also volunteer forms that are circulating. Join the campaign. You know, whether you are supporting our race or the other ones, together through our campaign, we are going to push ballot access. We are going to strengthen the local parties. We are training volunteers in phone banking. We have digital tools. There are very exciting things going forward now. This is the time to do it. Let's not wait. We are close to getting matching funds, which is going to double our money, and it will set a historic record for being the first campaign ever this early in the cycle to make matching funds. Let's make it happen. We can win this race. We can win the White House, and we can win the day. Either way, it's a win. Let's go forward and make it happen.
We're fighting over table scraps when we talk about the progressive candidates in other parties. I agree with Jill regarding our potential. I've been saying this for a long time, and I was struck to hear of some of the facts that she just mentioned. One out of two households were in poverty. And student debt. I absolutely agree. And I can say I feel your pain, because that was me for a long time. I took out loans to get through college and to get through graduate school. And then I entered the economy in the early 90s and was unable to find meaningful work for about 5 years. I got into teaching with various teaching assignments, and then I got my current job as a public servant, an air quality inspector for the County of San Diego. So I know what it's like to have student debt and to have a difficult time paying it back. At the very least, student loans ought to be at 0% interest. That would be a start. But better yet, education needs to be more affordable and quote-unquote free for a vast majority of people. I want to say that all of the gains in GDP since the 80s, since I was in college, have been skimmed off by the upper economic echelon. So the problem isn't that people aren't being productive. The problem is that the oligarchy at the top has a stranglehold on the rest of us, and they don't get it. They are removed. They are insulated from what is really going on. These jerks in the Republican Party have no clue as to what the average person encounters. I see it on the job every day. I see how businesses are struggling to get by, and I see the creative approaches that they often take. job sharing, for example, cutting to 90% of wages, including those who are running the business, even living in the business, having a bedroom in the place of business in order to get by because the adult children are living at home. I want to wrap up by saying that a quarter of those who could be registered to vote don't even bother. That is a vote. They don't want to be part of this. So we need to reach out to them as well. And that's why I'm running also as a protest candidate. Thank you very much.
When I announced that I was going to be an openly pagan candidate for president, at least testing the waters as it is, I was laughed at by some, and then 2 months later, the nation of Latvia elected a Green Party pagan president for their whole country. So all I can say is the United States is lagging behind Latvia. And that means that if I am the president of the United States, I would be bringing a matriarchal viewpoint to this nation. But the fact of the matter is that all the issues are one. I don't want to hear that climate change is the most important issue, or the Middle East is the most important issue, or that racism is the important issue, because they are all so interconnected, and we need to understand that in order to succeed. War, drugs, pollution, family support, bigotry, climate change, corporate crime, immigration, women's rights, the Middle East, it all boils down to what I call the unholy trilogy of fear, hate, and greed. So as the next president of the United States, I would like to be more than just a political leader. I would like to be the psychologist in chief. I think we need to start healing the human psychosis, the human pathologies, the human neuroses, so that we're not all living in this state of fear of the other, whatever that happens to be, whether it's the people next door or whether it's Mother Nature herself. And so we need to convert that fear, hate, and greed into respect and into honoring. So, this is a matter of human consciousness as much as it is political issues. I just want to say again that children are the most important issue we have, and I want one more thing. The rich are not the problem, because the rich can die and another rich person is going to take their place, because it's a rotten system that we have in place. A system of technology, of education, of corporations, of even religions manipulating people, where all of a sudden we are locked into a system. We need to outflank that system. We need to work around it. And yes, we're running for president of the United States, so we are working a little bit boring through the system. But the fact of the matter is that the poor may die today because of our policies, but the rich are going to die tomorrow because of those same policies. We are all in this boat together. So let the healing begin. Thank you.
I started by thanking some people, and I want to conclude by thanking people. My four fellow panel members and all of you. Boy, it was good to see this room fill up in the last 3 minutes before we started. It's a little thin earlier, but this is just wonderful, and all of you have been wonderful. I just wanted to say a couple of kind of personal things. First of all, I am a member of the Taoist faith. And I take it very seriously. I'm a member of the Bayanguan, which is just outside the Third Ring Road in Beijing. And it is the most feminine of all of the six major religions, because the yin and the yang specifically includes the woman. Okay? And there's the Taoist ring. Same personal thing is, I want you all to help me celebrate. I graduated from Northwestern Law School in 1965. This is the close of my first half century in the academic world. All right, I've been in the academy now for 50 years, and I don't know how much longer I'll go on. I don't know how much longer they'll have me, but it's been 50 years in the academy, studying seriously and reading and writing and appearing in politics, and it's been a real ride. I'll close with this. It's all tied together. Don't fear theory. In fact, the subatomic breakthrough has been made in political theory. The real balance is not between capitalism and socialism. Stop using those terms. It's between the analytic and the synthetic cognitive forms. And we are horribly unbalanced. the apples and apples beat the hell out of the apples and oranges. And that's why there's no aggregation, okay? And from there, start talking about your government. Why do we keep losing? Take a simple continuum, centrifugal, centripetal. We hate the centripetal governments. We don't want to be like North Korea or, you know, those kinds of things. But where are we? We're at the other structural extreme. Name me a country in the world that has a more centrifugal arrangement than the United States. Study that. I've studied it for decades. That's why we lose. And that's what the 18th century propertied white males gave us. They wanted a system like that. There was no way you could win, okay? If you understand the cognitions, and then you see the structures and processes as your second level, then you get down to contemporary issues, and finally, you resolve the green contradiction on a strong government. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you agree we have an embarrassment of riches amongst our candidates. I invite you to join me in thanking all of the candidates for this, our 2015 Green Party Presidential Candidate Forum. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you.
And that concludes the Green Party's 2015 Candidate Forum. Again, this was recorded in July at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, as part of the Green Party's annual national meeting. We're going to take a break and come back with James Lane, the keynote speaker from the Green Party's annual national meeting, right after this. And welcome back to the forum here on KKFI. To round out the hour, we're going to bring you the keynote speech given at the Green Party's annual national meeting held in July at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. The keynote speaker was James Lane, the Green Party's candidate for Congress in New York's 11th District. Let's get right into it.
It is my honor and my deep privilege to introduce to you James Lane.
Thank you, everyone. Man, David's intro just messed me up big time. Because I tell people, if people see me on the street when I was running for office this time around, I said, oh, you know, because they know me as doing background organizing. They know me as, like, you know, trying to get names, people to sign petitions, trying to help build databases, trying to videotape protests and rallies, great things that all those Greens are doing every day. But, you know, the major media doesn't cover it. So they know me as, like, you know, James the camera guy, James the database guy, whatever. And so now they started calling me James the politician. And I was like, wait a minute, don't insult me like that. Because, you know, in this country, politicians have given politics such a bad name. You know, they're not politicians, they're just shills for corporate masters. I mean, all the things that you've elected them to do, they don't care about. They only care about where they're getting their money from. So when someone calls me a politician, I say, wait a minute, brother. No, I'm a political activist. I want to change the situation that we're talking about right now. And so David's intro just now reminded me of why I consider myself a bad candidate at times, because so many issues that are so important affect me so much on a personal level that it's sometimes hard for me to talk, because I know myself going through certain issues, or family members or friends, and, you know, these are things that are not just, you know, campaign stump speech items. These are real things that affect people. I mean, these are real things that I'm just going to pick one instance of my life, right? So we talked about, you know, being 16, locked up, well, arrested for waiting for a friend at the subway station. This abusive cop comes over to me, telling me, you know, what are you doing on this train? You know, get on a train, get up the F off the station, he tells me. And I'm like, what did I do? And I asked him again. He's like, he says the same thing again. I'm like, but I'm waiting for a friend. And he says, okay, you want to do it the hard way, huh? So he slaps these handcuffs on me, he marches me upstairs, you know, calls for backup, waits for his partner to come, drives me from 96th Street up to 125th Street, and all along the way, he's talking about how he should just take me into the park and beat the hell out of me and leave me for dead. And I'm like, what kind of sick person is this that's on this force? And I'm thinking, oh, you know, that's just me, you know? Something inside of me said, this guy's crazy, let me just shut up. Because something worse might happen to me. But then, you know, as I got older and I hear about more and more cases, especially in New York, you know, like there's a case of Anthony Baez, he's playing football in the Bronx, and his football hits a police car, and the police officer chokes him to death, basically. And this is like a year after chokeholds have been prohibited in New York. And, you know, and here we are talking about Eric Garner once again. This is like, what, 30 years after that? And so all of these issues that we're talking about, and like I said, this right now is just this police brutality. All these issues affect me and so many other people I know so personally that it's hard for me to talk about them in a scenario like this without tears flowing like they are now. Homelessness. So many times in my life, you know, I'm not, I work, I do what I can do, but in New York City, it's hard to work and pay your rent and pay for all these other things. So many times before I was married, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be homeless in 2 seconds. And then something miraculously would come up. Like I used to have this penny jar full of glass. And there was one time I just had like no money and I smashed that thing all open. And I lived on that for about a month of just pennies, walking to work back and forth, eating $2 cookies to keep me alive. You know, this is no way for anyone to live. So when people talk about homelessness and food justice and all these items, yes, I've been through it. Yes, I know a lot of people that have been through it. And so these are the things that in 2000, when I heard about Ralph Nader running for the Green Party as president, I remember him as a child. When I was 7 years old, I remember seeing the Mike Douglas show, and he's on with like John Lennon and Yoko Ono talking about civic engagement, you know, getting people organized, you know, and the power of the vote and all these things. And, you know, at this time as a kid, I was like, you know, what's this all about? And I asked my mom, and she's like saying, you know, listen to him. What he's saying makes sense. And then so, you know, 30 years later, he's running for president. So I'm like, oh, it's time to listen again. That's what he's talking about. Because in 2000, I was 35 years old. And I have never voted. I've never registered to vote. And the reason why was because, as David mentioned, I grew up in Harlem. I grew up in Harlem in the 70s, early 80s. And there were so many injustices that I would see going around. I remember, you know, people going and talking to their local city, you know, their congressman or city council person and saying, hey, you know, the neighborhood's falling apart, you know, we have this, crime is rising, this is that, all these issues going on, and all these abandoned buildings and just a lot of issues, and people going to their elected officials crying out for help. And all they can say, well, you know, there's nothing we can do for you. Nothing we can do, there's no money for you, you can't really do, yeah, there's nothing we can do. And then, you know, around November, they come around asking for your vote. And I'm like, man, you didn't do your job the last 2 years, why should I give you my vote? Because people just feel they're entitled to it. And I'm going to say people, I say these politicians feel they're entitled to your vote. And so with that in mind, I said, well, there's no way. I'm a person, I can't hire somebody that's doing a bad job for me, you know, to continue to do a bad job, especially when it's so many important things at stake. As I mentioned, you know, lives matter to everything these politicians control. So anyway, so like I said, I didn't vote 17 years. Finally found out about the Green Party, and man, I was so happy. Because first of all, this is a party that back then, they had 10 key values I had to memorize. I'm like, 10 key values? This is a lot. Okay, I'll try it. You know, I was going through feminism, decentralization, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, years later, I'm glad it's like, oh, just 4 pillars? I got that.
that made a lot of difference in getting people involved in the Green. So thank you, Ever, said four pillars, because that brings in so much more under that. It's amazing, though, because with this organization, it is really that. It's not just an organization that runs a candidate for a November election and then they disappear. We're around day after day, minute after minute, doing things, organizing, talking about what to do, talking about issues that are all around. You know, and it could be, like, my 15 years of being a Green, I remember, you know, there's issues around fracking, there's issues around pipelines going in all around our state, there's issues around, you know, the women's right to choose, there's, like, all these issues, and we're always, because we're Greens, they all fall under our umbrella of things that we can champion. Now, the unfortunate thing in this world is that we don't get the credit we deserve for doing these things. And this is something that I've really felt horribly about, because going back to fracking, in New York, a lot of the groups, the environmental groups and such we were working with, the Stop Fracking in New York, we're saying, well, let's call for a moratorium on fracking, you know, that'll be good enough. And the Greens were the only ones that stood strong and said, no, an all-out ban on fracking, no to fracking, frack no, right? That was our thing. And because of that, the rest of the group picked up on it, and now they have a ban on fracking, you know? And those applause goes out to all the Greens in New York that were steadfast in saying we're staying by this because it is so important. You know, but there's, you know, the government, you can't trust them. You just can't trust them, because even though there's a ban on fracking, there's not a ban on pipelines that could be bringing in frack gas. So that's the next battle in that issue. Going back to my congressional run, because I want to focus on why I'm up here right now. Last year, last Friday, Eric Garner was strangled to death on Bay Street in Staten Island. And I was away in film school in Amherst, Massachusetts, at the Hampshire College, in a film program, learning how to make my video storytelling better so I could produce 28-minute segments to share on cable news access, you know, public access. Because I felt that everything we were covering needed to have public shows, and I wanted to help other people do the same too, so that we could all have our own channels, because as I said before, the major media is not going to cover a lot of the things we're doing, a lot of the things we're talking about, a lot of the issues that we're fighting for. They're not going to cover it. Forget about it. Because they're owned by the corporations that own the cops, that own the own the media, that it's all connected. Follow the money, it's all connected. So I was up there learning about this, and you know, I came back from class one night, and I saw man strangled to death by NYPD in Staten Island. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, 20 years after Anthony Baez, this is going on again? Again, another strangled death? And I saw the video, and I threw up. Because all those traumas, all those things that I know from so many people of police brutality, it was just so much, it was too much to bear. And I still to this day, I watch that video, and I just, it's not even a strangling, but it's Eric's words. Not the I can't breathe words, but everything he said up to that about, you're always doing this to me. You know, I'm tired of this stuff today. I know that feeling, and I know so many other people that know that feeling, because this is what the power structure does. And it is so disgusting to me when being a part of the Black Lives Matter movement, and we have to have a debate about, well, what was Eric doing before then? I mean, why didn't he just let the cop arrest him? It's like, so it's automatically the victim is the criminal here. What kind of world is this? So these are the things that personally affect me, and it's about truth and justice. And as Green Party members, we all are, I don't like to say soldiers, but we all fight for truth and justice in our party. Democracy, ecology, right? Right? Nonviolence, social justice. These are all things, these are our four pillars, and these are the things that are so important to human life and planetary existence. You know, and it's funny too why I said planetary existence, because a lot of my brothers and sisters in the Black Lives Matter movement that I've been talking to about joining the Green Party and getting involved, you know, they're coming in and they're all into it. But, you know, it's funny because sometimes my brothers and sisters have problems. They're like, yeah, I'm all for this, but I don't get this environmental part. I'm like, oh my God, you know. And then I have to show them the connecting dots. You know, it's like, we do realize that the asthma rates in communities of color are so much higher than in rich urban. Why is that? It's because when they put up these things like waste transfer stations and all these trucking decisions and whatever, these are things that affect your community. So once you start connecting those dots and showing that decisions that are being made against you, then they wake up and they're like, oh my God, now I see it. So, and that's what we do. As Green Party members, we're not just members of a political organization. We're activists, we're teachers, we're leaders. We do everything. We're a one-stop shop for making a better world. You know, and so I look at my recent congressional run in Staten Island. Well, I keep saying Staten Island because it actually covers District 11 in New York, covers Staten Island, where Eric Garner was killed, and Hurricane Sandy devastated a lot of homes over there, and also areas of Brooklyn, Bensonhurst, Bay Ridge, Gravesend, Dyker Heights, you know. And but when I first jumped into that area to look at like which sections of the district can really make an impact, we said we have to stay on the North Shore, because as soon as we went out to Staten Island, it was right in our face, at like the disparities. You know, I mentioned people feel uncomfortable when I tell them this, but even last week it came up again. There's an expressway that goes through Staten Island, right? A little bit towards the middle, but closer to the top of it. It's expressway, and people in Staten Island call it the Mason-Dixon line. And this is 50 years after we're celebrating these Supreme Court rulings from the Voting Rights Act and all these things and marching across bridges. But they call it that now. And so we said, you know what? We have to stay in this section of Staten Island. You know, we're probably going to lose this election because we're not being strategic on how to win this campaign. But, you know, we're going to make an impact here. We're going to let people know that the Greens are here and that they have a voice in our party. So there were days I would just, you know, against my campaign's better judgment, I would just go out as a rogue and I would go out and walk up and down Bay Street, because that was the street where Garner was killed. It's also, ironically, at one end of Bay Street was where Dan Donovan, the district attorney that failed to indict him, lived. He lived on the really fancy side with, you know, the high rise. And when I walked over to the side where the ferry was, that's where all my brothers and sisters were fighting to survive and talking about these issues of police brutality that they've been going through. And I met so many amazing people, and they all embrace what we do as the Green Party. They all embrace all of our issues, and they want to become more involved. The saddest thing about it was a lot of them were stuck in this pipeline to prison thing that we talk about. A lot of them said, I'm sorry, brother, I support you, but I can't vote for you. I'm like, why can't you vote for me? I've been convicted of this, convicted of that. I'm like, well, you know, what was the situation? It's like, well, the police said this, the police said that. And I'm like, oh, and once again, another way to strip away your power at the most basic level. You know, people talk about, you know, it's your right to vote. You know, citizen engagement is horrible in this country. It's such voter apathy. You know, people don't vote anymore. Well, you know what? People can't vote when you take their right away from them.
That's right.
So it is so upsetting and disgusting to me that people will say that kind of thing. You know, in my opinion, I think that, so what? He committed a crime. Why is his right to vote stripped away until he's, you know, he serves his probation and all that kind of stuff? That is just disgusting. Oh, thank you. So, you know, that's one of the issues. Other people I ran into, you know, they said, I can't register because I don't have a home right now. I'm living in a shelter. I'm living in a shelter with three other people, and And it was amazing to me, people that I met out there that were in shelters, so many people that were living in shelters on Staten Island. And they talked about these communities that they would build, like sub-communities, to sort of help each other out. Because when you go into the shelter system, you're only allowed to bring like one or two items with you. And if you have like children and you gotta support, what are you supposed to do? Oh, sorry kids, I can only bring one or two things and you're just gonna have to fight over these little bit of things I can bring in. So I found these amazing people, they would bond together and they'd cook meals for each other and they'd trade resources within each other. And it just made me feel like, first of all, we shouldn't even have this situation, but it gave me like a glimmer of hope that people like that existed, that would help each other out, rather than fighting over scraps. Because this is what usually happens in poor communities. You know, this is why crime goes up. You know, one group of people feel they don't have anything, and they have to take from somebody else, even though they're in the same community, which is so, so sad. You know, because we all should be bonding together and using that energy to go against the real people, the real causes, for why we're in this situation. We should be bonding together and going against these politicians, going against these corporations. You know what? Stop fighting over who's got better sneakers. Stop buying those damn sneakers.
Thank you.
You know, it's so upsetting. But, you know, we're Greens. We're hopeful people. We see that we could do so much with our party. And I feel like over the last 15 years, we've done a little bit to really bring awareness to it. But this year, it seems like a crossroads to something amazing because so many more people are getting involved and they're waking up. I mean, that's the only way I can really say it. I mean, the fact that people are actually coming out and saying that, you know, the system is horrible and 30-year Democrats I've met, they've been changing the registration of Greens. And they just see time and time again, you know, they see things like this TPP thing that they voted for, you know, where they voted no, they voted yes, they voted no, they voted yes, you know, and people are seeing these are all games that they're playing, and at the end of the day, it's costing us jobs, it's costing, you know, healthcare and housing and all these problems are being recreated by these people that are playing games. It's, like I said, these politicians, they need to be out of office because what they're doing is they're just using their titles as a career for themselves. They don't care about us. They don't. You know, and if anyone says, oh, no, well, there's a good politician out there, it's like, oh, yeah? Let me see. How many of them can say Black Lives Matter? Right. I know right now. I know right now when I was running, you know, of course, Dan Donovan's not going to say it. Well, I'll talk about him later, even though I don't want to. But the Democratic candidate that was running against Dan Donovan for Congress with me was at an NAACP forum with me, and somebody asked, as a city council person, this particular guy, these two police officers got killed in New York, and he had these little blue signs made up saying, go blue to support the local police. Great. And so somebody had challenged him on that and said, well, we saw that you sent out this thing for support the NYPD when the two officers got killed, but what about, you know, when black people are getting killed every 28 hours at that time? Do you have anything that says Black Lives Matter in your offices, or do you support that? It's like, and he came back with the usual response, all lives matter. And he said, yeah, that's fine. But we're saying, well, would you put something that says Black Lives Matter? And he continued to say all lives matter. You know, and so, and this was the thing that was so disgusting to me, because this is the guy that's supposed to be running against Dan Donovan, who couldn't indict the killers of Eric Garner. This is their champion. Someone who, he's saying right now, Eric Garner's life does not matter. And this is the guy I'm running against? Are you kidding me? So, it was so disgusting, but, you know, they feel they're entitled to your votes. They feel they could just be the Democrat, and you're going to vote for them because they're the Democrat, and that's it. But, you know, that time is gone. People are seeing it now. We're seeing it in New York. In our last statewide elections, it was a 28% voter turnout. We were like the lowest in the country because people are so disgusted with it. Lowest. And the argument is, at the same time, they had a Gallup poll that said 15 to 60% of the country want to see a third party. So, all these people that always spit numbers to us and talk about, oh, you don't have a chance to win because your poll numbers say this or whatever, they should look at those numbers and say, well, it's interesting how voter apathy, as you call it, seems to be bringing down the voter turnout down to 28%, but the need for a third party seems to be going up each year. So really, what my number says is that our Green Party candidate should be winning with 70% of the vote in every election.
That's right.
You know? And they would be, but the system is made so that's not gonna happen. And so that's what we need to do, is we need to think about what we're gonna do to change the system. And a lot of us are doing work right now. We're talking about electoral reform. We're talking about, you know, creating new media, creating independent media, truly independent media. I mean, within us, we're the ones that have to create this stuff. And then other people pick it up and they see it. I want to go back again about issues, because as I mentioned, the media is only going to let you know about a few things. With my campaign, I was surprised. We were all surprised. I was actually getting picked up by the media when I was running, because I did run in 2013, but that was more of like a protest campaign for Public Advocate. It's a weird position in New York that nobody knows anything about. But I was looking at the mayoral choices that were going around, and the current mayor, Bill de Blasio, I knew he was going to be a horrible mayor. And I said, well, if he's going to be mayor, then I have to be Public Advocate to make sure that the things he's proposing doesn't go through as smooth and easy for him. But, you know, didn't get much coverage back then. But in this election, we did get a lot. But it was strange because they would mention that I'm running for Congress against, you know, Dan Donovan and this guy, Vincent Gentile, the Democrat. But they wouldn't mention the Black Lives Matter issue. They were very, very careful to mention that this was your voice against police brutality. This is your voice against this injustice that has let his killers go free. This is your voice, you know, against the $15 an hour minimum wage. This is your voice against decriminalizing marijuana. Like, they were very particular on what they wanted to say. I was even on Fox and Friends. And talking about issues, and they said, you know, well, as a Green Party candidate, you know, you don't really have a chance in New York, you know, to win. And I was like, well, yeah, maybe not in New York City, it's going to be tougher, but in New York State, we have, you know, mayors, and we have all these people, and then they instantly cut me off and change the subject. Because the media doesn't want to know your power. The media does not want anybody outside of this room to know how powerful each and every one of you are. They don't want people to know that. Because that's going to be a revolt. And that's going to be a revolution that so many people out in the street have been calling for. Every brother and sister I know that's either working with immigration, you know, issues where, you know, they have family members that are feared of being deported, if they're dealing with, you know, Black Lives Matter issues, which covers everything from police brutality to mass incarceration, you know, all of these issues are all connected. Homelessness, hunger, healthcare, all of these things. They don't want you to see solutions. And, you know, everyone that you talk to says, well, you know, the only way we can really change anything is if we have a revolution in this country. You know, but, right? But, you know, when you say you need a revolution, what does that mean? Like, you know, people aren't gonna pick up rifles and take over the White House. They're not gonna do that. But we need to do a revolution within the system that they're currently controlling and bust through to that. We need to have a green revolution. We need to show people that the numbers that we can acquire, the numbers that we can mass together to make change is so huge that nobody can deny us our rights anymore. So, short of what I wanted to talk about today. I mean, like I said, there's so much work we have to do as Greens, and we know it. And there's times we get discouraged because we feel like everything we're doing is falling on deaf ears or whatever, but we gotta keep doing it. I mean, there's just way too many issues. There's way too many injustices in this world, from costly wars to spending trillions of dollars on that can be brought back to our communities to be rebuilding our schools, rebuilding our housing, to give affordable health care, free schools. I mean, we can have so much here, but we need to fight for it. You know, people talk about this is the greatest country in the world. We have so many freedoms. This country's not so great. It's really not. Right, the freedoms that we got, people had to fight and die for these freedoms. Is that really a country that's full of freedoms? No, you have to fight for every one of these freedoms. And these are freedoms that are basic human freedoms that everyone should be allowed to have anyway. So these are all things that are really important, I feel. I mean, I don't know how everyone else feels in the room, but I think that we have a solid opportunity in all the elections, not just next year's presidential election, because I know a lot of people are focusing on that now, but in all elections, special elections that come up, you know, any kind of elections that come up, we need to organize. We need to let people know that we exist, and we need to call out the current people that are running for office to replace whoever's horrible and say, okay, they say they're good, but what about this? I'm going to throw a name out right now, Bernie Sanders. Everybody I run into is like, say, yeah, but do you think, you know, the Greens will endorse Bernie Sanders? I'm like, why? Why would we endorse Bernie Sanders? You know, he doesn't, if he was a Green, that would be a different discussion. But he's not. His policies are not green.
We're not for sale.
Right, we're not for sale, exactly.
Hello.
So these are things that we all have to hold through. And like I said, you know, I look at Staten Island, this recent election in Staten Island, and to me that was like a test area for something that we started to do out there. The election didn't work out the way I wanted to, obviously, because they're not calling me Congressman Lane.
Not yet.
But we planted some serious seeds out there. And we haven't left that community. We still go out there. I go out there whenever I can. There's a comic book shop that I go out to visit now. And whenever I go out there, I also come and see, you know, for my son. I have a 10-year-old. It's not for me. And so when I go out to visit the comic book shop, I usually go by and stop by all the people I met out there. Because it's so important. I mean, the bond that I made with them over those 60 days of running that campaign were true bonds. There wasn't something I was trying to get a vote. I mean, people are struggling. People are hurting. And I can't turn away from that. I don't think anyone in this room can turn away from that. And there's so much injustices out there. Right now, they're going through another campaign for a district attorney out there. And it's funny. It's the same thing. A Republican and a Democrat running for district attorney. And they're both fighting for the same party lines. Because they're exactly the same candidate. So, you know, they're going to line up with some conservative, right-wing kind of person that's going to continue to let, you know, police issues run rampant. And we need to be there to support them. They have a lot of issues out in Staten Island that I didn't even go through. Like, you know, people that were affected by Hurricane Sandy, you know, still waiting to get their homes rebuilt. They're living in tents. We have other issues of people that are being, are afraid, deathly afraid, that they're building this project on the North Shore of Staten Island. This makes sense to anybody here. They're building a Ferris wheel. They're calling it the New York wheel. And that's supposed to bring money into the community. And it's so amazing because everybody knows, that's in the community, knows that people are just going to take the ferry over to Staten Island, ride the wheel, and go right back. There's no money going to be going back into the community. But what's scary is they're doing all this development around there. So people that are already having a hard time right now are already facing, where am I going to move if they start raising these rents, they start pushing us out. And that's what they look at when they look at the police presence, at the police issues of police brutality there, is that unfortunately the police is part of that real estate push. And we know this. You know, people don't like to talk about it a lot, but it's true. Whenever you see a heightened level of police activity, it's always in community of colors and the projects and like struggling areas. And it's a way to sort of intimidate those people out of those areas. And it's really sad. And it's, like I said before, people are waking up and they're seeing it. I think they're not waking up fast enough, but they are waking up, and we need to be there to support them and give them help when it happens, exactly. So that's really all I had to share with you all today. I mean, the most important thing is we need to be there for the people. We need to show the people that the Green Party is a party of the people. We don't take corporate donations. We know this. But there's more to that. We have integrity. Our four pillars are solid. All of our candidates are solid against those pillars. If we ever found a candidate, I don't know what would happen to him. If we found a candidate that snuck through and said, oh yeah, I'm green, yeah, yeah, checking off all the boxes and saying I'm this guy, and if we found out that he was the other way, I'm afraid of what you guys would do to him. Because we're green to an extent. we're really solid with our morals and our integrity. And I just want to thank everyone for listening to me, and I want to thank the organizers of this meeting for allowing me the opportunity to talk to you all and talk about what I just recently went through in this election. And hopefully, we'll walk away thinking about what we can do in the communities that are being threatened, with the people that are being oppressed and depressed in this horrible, abusive system that we have. What can we do to make it better? What can we do to bring more people into our party? Because we need to do this. The Democratic Party has outlived its usefulness. They should just not be even around. They shouldn't even bother running candidates because it doesn't make sense. What's interesting is, like on the Republican side, Donald Trump is like their new fear of like this third party candidate that's going to take all the votes from the Republicans. So it's really strange. But the Democrats need to just give up, and the Greens need to replace that void. Because we are the true party of the people. So once again, thank you all. And there's so much more I want to tell you, but I know we're on time limits. And I just wanted to open up for questions and answers now.